This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, April 8th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. In a moment, the congressional redistricting process in Arkansas may not be at an impasse, but it certainly remains unresolved. Roby Brock from TalkBusiness.net will discuss the different maps suggested by the House and Senate in Little Rock and what may happen next. Yesterday, the Arkansas Supreme Court upheld a lower court ruling that struck down Initiated Act 1 from 2008. That law, passed by voters in that year, barred unmarried couples from adopting or fostering children. The state's high court ruled that the law was too broad and infringed on the right to sexual privacy. The American Civil Liberties Union argued for the striking down of the ban. Rita Sklar, director of the Arkansas ACLU, says the unanimous decision is good for both adults and children in Arkansas.
What's best for the children is that the best parents possible be found, and excluding someone on the basis of their marital state is irrelevant to finding the best person for that child.
Jerry Cox, the director of the Arkansas Family Council, has a different view.
This is the worst Supreme Court ruling in the history of Arkansas, hands down.
The Arkansas Family Council was instrumental in placing the matter on ballots in November 2008.
The state of Arkansas seems to be ignoring the rights of children in this whole thing. When I read the opinion by the Supreme Court, about 90% of that opinion focused on the rights of adults and what adults get to do or not do. And I thought to myself as I read that, I thought, they're treating children like property or commodities.
Holly Dixon, staff attorney for ACLU Arkansas, says the repeal of Act 1 turns back what she considers one of the worst laws ever enacted in the state.
The law assumed that all of these excluded couples were automatically bad parents, and that's simply not true. The family council themselves admitted that throughout the case in an open court to the Arkansas Supreme Court. We have a shortage of homes in Arkansas, and so the choice for these kids under this law was to have a home or not have a home at all. And the ruling means that these kids have shot at home.
Jerry Cox says lawyers for the Arkansas Family Council have advised the organization that there is almost no likelihood to move the matter to federal court, though he does say there remains the option to place the matter before voters as a constitutional amendment.
Well, I mean, we're thinking about it today, but I think we would be months away from any kind of decision to do that. That's something that you don't enter into lightly because it's very hard work. And, you know, we would have to be certain that we had enough volunteers to make another run at this. Obviously, it's disheartening. If you're one of the 3,000 people who helped us get this on the ballot by circulating a petition, to watch those justices sit there on the bench and just obliterate all the hard work that was done, that's disheartening to people who volunteer. And it's hard to mobilize people to come back and try something like that again with the idea that some judge may just erase all the work that you've done.
But Holly Dixon, staff attorney for ACLU Arkansas, says the decision announced yesterday by the Arkansas Supreme Court is an example of checks and balances.
You know, the people elect the Arkansas Supreme Court judges, too, and they unanimously saw that the facts and the law just weren't there to support this type of ban. All it does is serve to hurt the children in the state of Arkansas and try to inject the government into people's bedrooms.
Jerry Cox also notes that voters elect Supreme Court justices in Arkansas, and he says he hopes that's a matter that isn't lost on supporters of Act 1 in the year 2012.
In my opinion, the people of Arkansas ought to take issue with that when it comes election time and the Supreme Court justices are on the ballot for a vote. The people ought to ask themselves, do these justices reflect my values or their own personal opinions? And I think in this case, the personal opinions of the court outweighed the values of the people of Arkansas who voted for this.
Jerry Cox is the director of the Arkansas Family Council, an organization that shepherded Initiated Act 1 onto Arkansas ballots in November 2008. Yesterday, the Arkansas Supreme Court upheld a lower court ruling that struck down Initiated Act 1. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. And the answer to the redistricting question is, we don't know yet. The Senate and House will gather again next week to try to hammer out a compromise. With me on the phone from Little Rock is Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net. Roby, I guess it's not a surprise that this session continues because of redistricting.
It's not a big surprise. I think this was one of the more likely scenarios we thought would play out after the Senate passed its plan. We knew it would come to the House State Agencies Committee. Robert Thompson's plan, he's from Paragould, and it basically looks like the Fayetteville thumbs up. It moves the Fayetteville finger a little east of there and takes in some parts of Madison County and drops Russellville and Pope County down to the 4th Congressional District. But as kind of we expected the script to go, the House State Agencies Committee did not approve that plan, and we are once again in no man's land.
Well, what is the future? I mean, you could have this House proposal, the one that is called the Fayetteville Finger or Fayetteville the Fourth. It could be extracted from the Senate committee, could it not?
It could. The problem is you have to have 18 senators on board in the 35-member Senate to be able to extract a bill from committee. And right now there's only about 15, maybe 16. So they're going to have one, two, maybe even three senators, particularly Democratic senators, would be where they would come from more than likely, agree to do that. I know I've talked to one of them, Senator Jerry Taylor from Pine Bluff, and he basically told me, no way, no how, I'm never going to go for that. So their choices are pretty limited, and their ability to do that is pretty limited. And so I'm not convinced we'll see that be successfully pulled off.
Okay, let me now go over the last couple of months. Sebastian County and Fort Smith does not want to leave the third. Voters in Boone County have told Congressman Womack, please, we don't want to leave the third. The Fayetteville Finger met with outcry from a vast majority of people in Fayetteville, Washington County, and Northwest Arkansas. People in Ashley County didn't like being moved. People in Madison County don't want to be moved. The House doesn't like the Senate's plan. The Senate doesn't like the House's. Is there a chance that this is going to be settled soon?
I think we're going to have to channel the spirit of King Solomon to make this work out. And by the way, you left off Pope County.
Oh, yes.
Not wanting to move from the 3rd District, too. I honestly don't know. I really think that right now that the leadership in the House is going to put a full-court press on trying to get the Fayetteville Finger, Fayetteville to the 4th, pulled to the Senate floor. If they're successful in being able to pull it to the Senate floor, then they clearly have the number of votes they need to pass it. And so I think that that's probably the next tactic. If that fails, I'm not so sure they just don't go to the drawing board, blow up the maps that they've been debating, and come up with something that just hasn't been thought of yet.
I think the one thing we can agree on is it's impossible that something's going to happen that pleases everybody.
That is for sure. And, there's even been some talk in the halls from both sides of the aisle that maybe in future sessions they look at a better way to do this, you know, check out what some other states have done, either a bipartisan commission or a nonpartisan commission, or I think the state of Iowa actually uses some sort of computer program to get them to a starting point, and then they negotiate the small details out. There'll be some crying and gnashing of teeth if that happens, because the Republicans have made such gains. That's what's complicated this process so much, is that we now have a lot of parity in the two parties. In the past, it's always been an overwhelming supermajority of Democrats. It was pretty easy for the Democrats to draw the districts like they wanted to. And that's not the case anymore, and I don't think that's going to be the case in the future as we see Republican gains being made and probably continuing being made. I just don't think this issue is going to change for them 10 years from now.
What are the chances this just goes to the courts?
I would put them at less than 50% right now. I still think that there is will from House and Senate leadership to avoid that. Speaker Robert Moore told me after the committee meeting today that he was convinced that they would find a way to do this without sending it to the court system. So he at least is confident that they'll find a solution, or committed to finding a solution so that they don't have to do that. He basically said that would be an abdication of the legislature's duties. So he seems pretty committed to doing that. I've not spoken with Senator Bookout, but I would expect him to have a very similar sentiment. And they still have until April 27th to meet their adjournment resolution. So there still are another 2 weeks plus to try to hammer this out. As frustrating as it is for everybody involved, as frustrating as it is for everybody observing from the outside looking in, you know, this is not an easy solution for them to find. And you got a lot of partisanship driving it, and I think that they're going to keep on trying until their absolute last deadline.
And you'll be following this weekend at talkbusiness.net?
Unfortunately, I will be, yes. I would much prefer to be fishing or hiking or at a child soccer game or baseball game, but I'll continue to monitor development.
Roby, thanks as always.
You're welcome.
This is Ozarks at Large on KUAF 91.3 FM. Just ahead, a conversation with Alexander McCall Smith. He's the author behind several literary series, including the immensely popular The Number One Ladies Detective Agency series. Tonight, he'll be speaking for free at the Fayetteville Public Library. I caught up with him on the phone a couple of days ago. That conversation in just a few minutes. But as you probably know, if you've been listening at all today, this is the beginning of KUAF's spring fundraiser for 2011. Our spring fundraiser goal, $150,000. Due to the uncertainty of federal funding for KUAF, this year it's more important than ever that we hit that goal. And your call, your donation today will help. We do thank you. We are in the information age. Experts have been warning us for some time now that we're in danger from too much information. I first read about that, I think, in 1996 or 1997, well before Facebook or Twitter or any number of websites or digital television stations existed. Print, television, the internet, social media, it can be like a fire hose of nonstop information. Have you ever tried to take a drink from a fire hose? Not always a good idea. Of course, as a listener to KUAF, you're covered, because NPR News cuts right to the heart of everything that matters to you. It's direct. It's to the point. It respects your intelligence and has just the right amount of commentary. But the real news is this: to keep the quality programming on the air, the quality programming that is Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, Talk of the Nation, we do need your help. If you have developed a listening habit to KUAF and public radio, please remember each of these programs, including programs like Ozarks at Large, cost money. And the biggest chunk of the money that we use to pay for these programs comes from listeners just like you. You can call in now, 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF. And when you call in, you're supporting all of the programming on KUAF, including the new expanded daily Ozarks at Large, something we've been doing for about 7 months now. You can support your listening habit with your contribution. You decide the amount, you decide the method. 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF. You can also call 575-KUAF, and thank you.
Hi, I'm Scott Simon, host of NPR's Weekend Edition. Public radio is a partnership. Each day, we do all we can to bring you good radio, informative and enjoyable. Now, in exchange, we ask that once a year you make a membership contribution to support this station. Your contribution is vital. Listener support is public radio's most important and reliable source of income. Here's how you can make a positive difference.
You can make a difference, a positive difference, in your radio listening habit by calling 800-522-5823, 800-522-KUAF. You can also pledge online at KUAF.com, a safe and secure website. You can determine the amount. You determine the method. We would like to hear from you on this very first day of our spring fundraiser, 800-522-5823 or KUAF.com. And from everyone at Ozarks at Large and KUAF, thank you very much. This is Ozarks at Large. Alexander McCall Smith is a popular, prolific, and varied writer. His series, The Number One Ladies Detective Agency, has delighted millions of readers around the world. He's also the writer behind the Isabella Dalhousie novels, the 44 Scotland Street series, the book Law's Orchestra Saves the World, and many others. Tonight, he'll give the talk, The Very Small Things of Life, beginning at 7 at the Fayetteville Public Library. He'll also take questions from the audience and sign copies of his books. Earlier this week, I reached Mr. McCall Smith by phone and asked him if the very small things of life make for a good life and for a good story.
Well, I think they're very important in one's life, and I think that if one can put them into a story, that's an additional bonus. Obviously, stories have to have a little bit more than that, but I think that attention to these small human interactions actually adds texture to a story, just as it adds texture to one's life.
You write often, you're published often, and you have many different recurring characters. I'm wondering, is it ever difficult to keep Precious from the Ladies Detective Agency series apart from Isabel?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because on one occasion, a few books ago, I actually did mix them up in that Mara Matsui, Precious from Matsui, started talking like Isabel Dalhousie and talking about the sort of issue that Isabel Dalhousie discusses. And my editor in New York, Edward Kastenmeier, said to me when he looked at the manuscript that he thought that on page whatever it was, Mara Matsui had slipped into the persona of Isabel Dalhousie, and I looked and he was absolutely right. That was a momentary aberration on my part. Generally speaking, I managed to keep the characters apart just by the simple expedient of saying to myself before I sit down to write, where am I?
Do you use the same editor each time?
Yes, I've got a couple of editors. I suppose I've got three principal editors rather than two who look after my work. There's an editor in New York, an editor in London, and an editor in Edinburgh. And so I'm accustomed to working with these three people, and it works very well. The relationship between an author and his or her editor is a very important one.
You set many of your works, if not all, in real places. You're not like Faulkner and invent a place. Is there an advantage in using Edinburgh?
Well, I do use real places. I think that people actually rather like that. I think that it adds something to fiction if it takes place in an identifiable place with real landmarks, so to speak. And my experience is that people enjoy that because it helps them to imagine that what is happening in the book actually really is happening. And when you come to think of fiction, it's an extraordinary leap of the imagination in a way that you when you're reading the book, you think that the events that you're reading really did happen, and that's of the essence of fiction. So I find using real places is quite important. And of course, I have in one of my Portuguese irregular verbs books, I used Fayetteville, Arkansas, as a setting. I did set a scene in Fayetteville.
How do you choose where to set the scene?
It's where I've been.
Okay.
Yes, you can usually, readers can follow my travels by just reading the books, and they realize that I've been in these places because I start talking about them.
When you use a real place, though, does that put a little bit more pressure on you as a writer? Because someone who lives in Edinburgh or someone who has been to Fayetteville can say, now, wait a second.
Yes, you've got to be careful. And so I would never dream of using a place that I didn't know well as a full setting or the major setting of a novel. Obviously, I can have characters going to other places, and you can get away with that because people don't expect you to have an intimate knowledge of the place. But certainly, if one's going to set a book in a place, you really have to know it very well. You really have to live there, in my view. So my books are set in Scotland. Most of my books are set in Scotland, but I also write about Botswana, and I spend a lot of time in Botswana, so I feel comfortable about setting a book there.
The 44 Scotland series originally began as a serial.
Yes, in the newspaper.
Right.
And indeed, it continues to do that in that I publish it chapter by chapter in the Scotsman newspaper back in Edinburgh as I write it. So right at the moment, I'm doing that. So while I'm on this tour in the United States, I'm having to write chapters of the Scotland Street novel and send them back, and then they appear in the newspaper, and then they appear as a book. And that, of course, is an old, tried and trusted
Charles
way
Dickens.
Of writing books. As you know, this is the way Dickens did it, and a number of other 19th century writers used that. And I think it's, firstly, it's great fun, but also it's quite a good way of, I suppose, focusing on the development of the plot, knowing that it's happening in real time, that you can't change things.
T- Tales of the City was first serialized, wasn't it?
Exactly. In fact, it was a conversation I had with Armistead Maupin in San Francisco at a party at Amy Tan's house when I chatted to him about Tales of the City. And when I returned to Scotland, I mentioned this conversation in an article I wrote, and the editor of one of the Scottish newspapers said, "Right, you're on, you do that for us." And I rashly accepted and never looked back. And I've done 6 volumes so far. I'm writing the 7th volume. So it's been going for six years plus, actually.
I know when Dickens wrote, of course, it wasn't daily. I think it might have been weekly or monthly at times. And he, on at least some of his serialized novels, didn't know how it was going to end when it was being published.
Yes.
Do you have it completely done and then have it serialized?
No, I do it as I go along, and indeed I'm in the same boat as he was in that I don't know how it's going to end. With this current one, I think that we're about, we're more than two-thirds of the way through. So although I haven't written the final chapters, and I'm really only about 4 days ahead of publication at the moment, I nonetheless have an idea of how it's going to end. But it may change a little in these final weeks of the writing. One has to be prepared for that.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like a bit of a tightrope walk.
Yes, it is. I think that that's a very good analogy. And indeed, one can't really look down when you're walking on a tightrope. Not that I've ever done it, nor indeed I propose to do it, but I gather that the thing you do try to avoid is looking down. You look ahead. So really, I don't dare think about what I'm doing, because it's just it's quite frightening. Actually, there I'm writing a novel which is being published as I write it, and the contractual obligations associated with that, and the newspapers all geared up to it, and people have invested in it and whatnot, and so I really have to do it. And so I don't stop and think.
The novels that come from the number one ladies' detective agency have never been to Africa, have maybe not even really considered Africa until reading the series. Do you find that a responsibility, that you're introducing this continent to so many people?
Well, yes, it is a responsibility. You're quite right. And I'm very aware of that responsibility. And I do take it pretty seriously, in that I know that there are people who read the Botswana novels and think, well, we should go and see that part of Africa and then go. And obviously, I would feel very concerned if there were many people who did that and then discovered that they had been misled or they didn't like it. But fortunately, the contrary is the case. And so people go off to Botswana having read the books, and then they tend to say to me when I meet them at signings and so on, they tend to say, well, we had a wonderful time, and yes, the country is as nice as you suggest it is, and that I'm always very pleased about. And indeed, I do take the view that Botswana is a wonderful country, and so I'm really pleased when people have that experience and think that is the case.
One final question. There are some people in our area who have visited Edinburgh, and they were told by locals a story. And I'm going to try to find out if it is fact or just a great legend to tell tourists. But the story goes that you, Ian Rankin, and J.K. Rowling all live very close, and that the space is called by locals the writer's block. Is that true?
Yes, people. I don't know who coined that phrase, writer's block. It's quite a good phrase for it. Curiously enough, there were three authors who lived really within a stone's throw of one another. Ian Rankin lives just 2 doors away from me. He writes these very good Inspector Rebus novels. And then J.K. Rowling, who writes the Harry Potter series, she lived around the corner. She's moving, still in Edinburgh, but moving. But people did call it writer's block.
Mr. McCall-Smith, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much indeed.
Alexander McCall-Smith will give the talk, The Very Small Things of Life, tonight at 7 at the Fayetteville Public Library. He'll also take questions from members of the audience and sign copies of his book. You can hear more from our conversation online at OzarksAtLarge.com. It's 28 minutes before 1 o'clock. Just ahead on Ozarks at Large, how young people, philanthropy, and Carroll County nonprofits are coming together. Jacqueline Froelich has that story in just a couple of minutes on Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. This is the spring fundraiser for KUAF 91.3 FM. We take just a few minutes in between news stories on Ozarks at Large to remind you of your very important role in public radio. It's your contribution, your financial support that's kept your favorite programs on the air. Programs like Ozarks at Large, but also Fresh Air, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Car Talk. You can make your financial contribution right now, 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF, 800-522-5823. You can also pledge online at KUAF.com. You can use the KUAF app on your iPhone as well. There's a special place right there where you can make your donation. It's your financial support that has allowed us to expand Ozarks at Large. So when the Arkansas Supreme Court announces a major decision on Wednesday, you can hear about it that day and immediately the day after. So when congressional redistricting is up in the air, you can get analysis from people who are there in the legislature that day. That was our plan when we expanded this program. We still also bring you interviews with people like Alexander McCall Smith, who will be at the Fayetteville Public Library tonight. We wanted to bring you local, statewide news, news about politics, about business, about culture that affects your life. And now we can do it every day of the week. We've done that with your help. If you appreciate expanded local news every day on KUAF, please remember that local news, just like national, international news, does cost money. We've been able to do it with your support. And if you haven't called in yet, please consider doing so now. 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF or online at KUAF.com. And thank you.
Hello, this is Sylvia Poggioli in Rome. You can rely on NPR as your source for local and international news from all corners of the globe. Right now, NPR is relying on you. Your support is as important as ever. You can make a difference with a gift of any amount. Please give today. The news you depend on depends on you. Thank you.
And you make the call right now. It takes about a minute. You determine the amount. That's completely left up to you. You determine the method, whether you want to pay by check, by a credit card, by monthly installment, payroll deduction if you're a University of Arkansas employee. All of those big decisions are left up to you. The only one that we try to persuade you about this week is the one to make the call or make the contribution in the first place. If you have any questions, our phone volunteers can answer those questions. 800-522-5823. 575-5823 or online at KUAF.com, and thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for your calls of financial support during this first day of our spring fundraiser. Everyone at Ozarks at Large does appreciate your support. A diverse group of high school students from Carroll County is actually a collection of volunteer youth philanthropists. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the Carroll County Community Foundation's Youth Advisory Council has provided a leg up for dozens of local charities.
Two adult leaders and four high school students are jammed into the tiny headquarters of the Carroll County Community Foundation below the Bank of Berryville on Highway 23 South. They've gathered to tell listeners about their amazing venture. Since 2002, in nine different grant cycles, the Carroll County Youth Advisory Council has made 70 grants to 42 projects operated by charities, schools, hospitals, youth camps, libraries, and arts centers, totaling more than $44,000.
I'm Sharon Sperlin, and I am the board chairman of the Carroll County Community Foundation, which is an affiliate of the Arkansas Community Foundation. It's a community foundation that has a statewide interest and basis, and there are 27 affiliates throughout the state of Arkansas.
Arkansas Community Foundation was founded in 1976 with an initial investment of $258,000 from the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation. Today, it manages assets of more than $120 million, providing funding to communities to support health, human services, environment, education, arts, and humanities, even animal welfare programming. It also operates 19 youth advisory councils, called YACs, around the state. Every summer, representatives from each council attend a meeting to network and exchange ideas. Dr. Tina Cohn, a veterinarian with a practice in Berryville, is Carroll County Community Foundation's YAC Adult Advisor.
Well, the YAC organization is We have 30 students from high school students from around the county. We meet once a month, and they learn about philanthropy, community need, and they also have their own permanent endowment fund.
The Yak Endowment was seeded by a grant from the Kellogg Foundation, a huge philanthropy based in Battle Creek, Michigan, that supports children and families. The Carroll County Yaks Endowment Fund, managed by ACF, is currently valued at $32,000. Erin Goodyear is 17, attends Eureka Springs High School.
We build our endowment by doing fundraisers like the letter writing campaign. We do that, and we just build it up gradually. And each year we have a different amount that we can give away, and it's usually, you know, a few thousand. I think this year it was around 6,000.
Elizabeth Hale, I'm 14, I'm homeschooled. How I got involved was there were several members that were homeschooled also, and they just asked me to join. And it's just a really different organization to be a part of. So I just jumped in and just became a member, and I've been having a really good time since.
Paige Summers, I'm 18, and I'm at Berryville High School. I was a bit isolated. I didn't really have a lot of contact with people from other school, and this has really opened up those doors to be able to have, you know, countywide participation in things and to be a part of something that's, you know, important to the community.
My name is Hayden Poff, I go to Green Forest High School. When I was asked to do it, you know, I didn't hesitate. I signed the paperwork and did it, and I've never regretted it ever since.
Who could regret giving money to needy children? One charity the Yaks have helped was Loaves and Fishes Food Bank in Berryville.
Elizabeth Hale, and every year they have an opportunity to fill up backpacks for the kids.
And they have all of the supplies and stuff, and so Yak volunteers go in there and they, like, help donate and, you know, organize it.
They ended up stuffing over 400 backpacks with school supplies.
Right, all of the kids that get the backpacks are below the poverty line. So that shows you how much of a need there is in Carroll County. I mean, if we're giving 400 backpacks to little kids who are below the poverty line, there is definitely, like, a deep need in this area.
Other charity youth programs the Yaks supported in 2010 include the Carroll County Arts Council's Children's Theater, Bethel Agape Food Pantry for head lice treatments, the Eureka Springs Soccer Club for an equipment purchase, Ozark Guidance Center in support of its summer services for kids, Green Forest School District for sewing machines, the Merlin Foundation for a Teen Drugs Summit in Carroll County, Eureka Springs High School East Lab for robotics hardware, Green Forest Intermediate School to build a greenhouse, and North Arkansas Community College for its GED program. Each year, the Arkansas Community Foundation solicits nonprofits to submit Yak grant proposals, which groups can pick up at county libraries or download online. Then youth advisory councils decide who gets what. Elizabeth Hale.
About 15 applied, but we only granted out to around nine organizations, and it's really hard to kind of sort through them and, you know, just decide, no, we're not going to grant these.
Council members study the requests, making sure the projects benefit youth and other criteria, applying a score. Here's Hayden Poff.
A lot of the grants we get, the criteria that they list, sometimes it's specific, sometimes it's not. We've run into a lot of problems where they were not exactly specific, and it was hard for us to grant out money to those organizations. But the ones that did list specifically what they want, what they needed, we did take in consideration the money offered, and so we did.
Of course, sometimes the merits of any given application is hotly debated, but donations are decided by consensus. The council is currently raising money towards their Yak endowment via a coin drive, Paige Summers.
And we were trying to see who could bring in the most spare change from around their house and around their lives. All the money we collected went towards our endowment, growing it. And the letter writing campaign actually contributes to that too. It's not just trying to spend that money that we get. We only spend the interest. So, I mean, that's two ways that I know that we contribute to that.
Paige Summers says Yak has been a huge learning curve for him.
By seeing how much need there is in Carroll County, it truly puts things in perspective for us. Before any, you know, Yak involvement, I wasn't very thrifty, shall we say. But since now that I see every dime I waste that could be going to someone else, it's almost like a crime. I mean, it's just, it puts things in perspective and shows you that you're not the only person in the world that needs to be spending money.
Summer says at Christmas, members of YAC can be seen ringing bells for the Salvation Army in Carroll County in frigid conditions.
It's a solid thing, fun to be a part of, because you get to, you know, not only see people in the community, but you also get to help them help other people in the community, even just not face-to-face help. And it's pretty easy. I mean, it's not difficult to ring a bell.
Not many young people have even a notion of what philanthropy is, how it works. Grant proposals, endowments. You're just so far ahead of the curve. How does that feel?
Erin Goodyear, it feels really great because I see teachers at my school all the time working, like grant writing and working to, you know, fund different projects that they have. And I see them working so hard and I think, wow, this is so great. I wish someone could give you money. And being a part of the other end of that and seeing how people do give out money, I understand it a lot more. And I realize now that just donating money to an organization that locally, like we went to the Merlin House and the Merlin Foundation's place, actually seeing that firsthand, their location and where like abused children go when they, you know, have no other safe place was really, really powerful.
Elizabeth Hale, just the fact that, I mean, we're helping these kids and it just gives you an amazing feeling inside. And I think that's the biggest thing I've gotten out of it. It's the best feeling ever.
Hayden Poff is producing a documentary video about the Yaks with ABC National News correspondent Erin Hayes. She's a resident of Carroll County.
We've videoed some of the people that gave us grants, and it was just so much fun getting to work with her and interviewing other people who were giving money to Yak.
Hayden Poff's actually heading off to college next autumn to study filmmaking. None of these young people say they plan to pursue a career in philanthropy, but they all say that for sure they will become charitable adults. And in closing, here's Hayden Poff from Green Forest High School with a pitch.
And if you guys are fired up about giving, you guys can send it to Carroll County Community Foundation, 149 Huntsville Road, Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And you can contact us at 479-253-8203. Or at www.arcf.org/Carroll County.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Wayne and Janet Clark of Berryville are providing a matching grant of up to $2,500 to the Carroll County Youth Advisory Council Endowment. YAC members have launched a letter-writing campaign soliciting support. To learn more about YACS, you can visit arcf.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On tonight's show, we'll hear music from Kurt Elling and John Pizzarelli, Terrence Blanchard, Avishai Cohen, Stefan Grappelli, Jerry Allen, Michael Brecker, and much, much more. I hope you'll tune in this Friday at 10 o'clock.
This is Ozarks at Large, and this is the first day of KUAF's spring fundraiser for 2011. Our goal for this spring fundraiser, $150,000. Due to the uncertainty of federal funding for KUAF this year, it's more important than ever that we hit that goal. We do that with your help, your financial contribution in the amount of your choosing. Your donation right now will help. Thank you very much. The number that you can use to call in your financial support, 800-522-5823, 800-522-KUAF, or 575-KUAF. You can pledge online as well at KUAF.com. Most people rely on radio for their daily news because radio is, without a doubt, the most convenient way to stay in touch with world events. You can take radio with you anywhere with a smartphone. You can have it anywhere in the world, and you don't have to look at it to use it. KUAF combines the convenience of radio with balanced, insightful analysis of state, local, national, and world events. Now, whether it's the current state of politics, if you want to know more about the possible shutdown of the federal government, or it's something about congressional redistricting in Arkansas, which is also seemingly at a standstill right now, then you can count on KUAF to bring you the details, help you understand these issues more. If keeping informed is important to you, then please make the decision that it's worth your financial support. It takes about a minute to make your financial contribution. You can call us at 575-KUAF or 800-522-KUAF. That's 800-522-5823 to make your pledge. You can also pledge online at KUAF.com. You determine the value of public radio in your life, and you determine what your budget will allow you to contribute. We leave those decisions up to you, but I do encourage you to make the call. Or if you're listening on your smartphone, you can go to the KUAF app and pledge there as well. We try to make it as easy and simple and painless as possible. 800-522-5823 or KUAF.com, and thank you. This is Friday Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
We're going to talk about the thing that makes me happier than anything.
If I know you, that's theater.
That is theater. Well, it's also food, and that's at the end of this segment.
Oh, okay, okay.
But this weekend is a veritable smorgasbord of theater,
mm-hmm.
followed by dessert, so to speak, next weekend.
Okay.
So here we go.
Very good.
This weekend only, Show and Tell, a Sheet Fort Experience.
Mm-hmm.
This is Artist Laboratory Theater. It's happening at 21 West Mountain Street in Fayetteville, 8 o'clock today and 8 o'clock tomorrow. As they did before, the company's going to build a giant sheet fort. You know, the kind we built when we were kids.
Sure.
And this time inside it will be Show and Tell, a multimedia kind of thing. They say whether it's in the form of an insightful to-do list on a post-it note or online personal ads, home movies or street art, it's a show of found items.
So you'll go through as a patron?
Mm-hmm.
You'll go through the sheet fort and look at each item?
Right. They warn that this is for adult audiences, mm-hmm. but it should be interesting. Now, this weekend and next weekend, Ladies in Retirement at Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. It's 7:30 tonight and tomorrow, 3 o'clock Sunday, and 7:30 next Friday and Saturday. Tickets are $10 to $20. This is a murder mystery set in the 1880s, so we get beautiful Victorian costumes. Mm-hmm. And it's about an aging actress who hires a new companion, and then the new companion's sisters come to stay, and then the aging actress disappears.
Uh-oh.
And Betty Butcher's in it. Should be great fun, and you can find out more about it at 751-5441.
That's at ACO.
This weekend and next.
Gotcha.
I told you, it's wow. Wow. This weekend and next at Fort Smith Little Theater.
I know what this show is.
Sex, Please, We're 60.
Mm-hmm.
In the vein one assumes of Run for Your Wife.
That sort of, yes.
That British sort of comedy. It's at 8 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2:30 Sunday, and again next weekend. Tickets are $10. It starts with a prim innkeeper
mm-hmm.
and an amorous neighbor who frequents her successful bed and breakfast, where many of the guests happen to be menopausal women.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny already. Mix in another neighbor who's developed a little blue pill called Venusia.
Okay.
A famous writer of racy romance novels, and a Southern belle with an overactive libido. Should be lots of fun. 783-2966.
That's at Fort Smith Little Theater.
This weekend and next at Rogers Little Theater. Quite possibly my favorite play of all time. Arsenic and Old Lace.
Another, we got some hijinks. We have some laughter. We have some elderly
some murder
women.
Murder and yeah. poisoning.
I see
of course,
a trend.
You know the story. It was a movie with Cary Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Two elderly spinster sisters who just want to do the right thing by lonely men who come to their house seeking a room.
Yeah, yeah.
And the right thing happens to be killing them.
I was going to say, the room comes up for rent a lot.
A lot.
A lot of turnover.
And then they bury them in the Panama Canal.
Yes.
And you know this. And it stars Kathy McClure and Elizabeth Kissinger. It's going to be hilarious. Tickets are $15 to $42. 8 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday. And then again next weekend, 631-8988.
That's Rogers Little Theater.
And starting next Friday, this is the dessert, Reasons to be Pretty at Theater Squared.
Neil LaBute's play, nominated for Best Play for a Tony.
And if you know anything about Neil LaBute, I think his stuff is brutal. Funny, but brutal.
This one is, by all accounts, from the New York Times to the cast,
less
to the
brutal.
Director, less brutal, more funny, but honest. Honest is the word they use.
I think that it will, if nothing else, be interesting. One of the reviews I read said, you know, if nothing else, you're going to have a lot to talk about on the way home.
Yeah, that's good theater.
So, yes, it is. 7:30 April 15th, 2 and 7:30 April 16th, 2 o'clock April 17th, and again the next two weekends. Tickets start at
$22. Okay.
571-2728. Also this weekend, some of my other favorite topics,
mm-hmm.
quilts.
Where?
Tomorrow's Heirlooms 3. It's a juried show sponsored by the Quilt Guild of Northwest Arkansas, and it's at the Benton County Fairgrounds.
Okay.
It ends at 6 today. And it's 9 to 6 tomorrow. Admission is $5. 250 quilts. Gorgeous stuff. Gorgeous stuff. The UFO conference is this weekend in Eureka Springs.
Uh-huh.
With music by John Two Hawks.
Yes. He's a personal friend of one of the speakers, I believe.
Yes. And, you know, love me some UFOs. So doors open at 8 o'clock today and close at noon on Sunday. You can find out more at OzarkUFO.com. There's a new exhibit at the Rogers Historical Museum of Children's Book Illustrations.
Oh, fantastic.
Beautiful stuff. It's called Draw Me a Story, A Century of Children's Book Illustrations.
This is a traveling
exhibit. It's free, and it's open through May 21st.
Perfect.
621-1154. Tomorrow at 2, the Canadian Tenors.
And now remember, that's an afternoon show.
Right.
2
Do
o'clock.
Not be confused.
Right.
It's not 2 in the morning or 7 at night. It's
right.
2 in the afternoon. Tickets start at $24 at the Walton Arts Center. The Horse Festival is this weekend.
With an equine extremist named Tommy Turvey.
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
It means he gets his horses to do cool things.
Oh, okay.
I checked to see what equine extremist meant. It starts at, I believe, 10 tomorrow at the Pauline Whitaker Arena on the University of Arkansas campus. The shows are at noon and 3:30, horsefestival.org. And Pettigrew Day is tomorrow.
That's right, in Pettigrew.
It's a chance for friends and family of Madison County to come and talk about the history of the community. You know, it started with the Shiloh Museum and Wayne and June Martin, and it's a great thing. This year's topic is canning. And Joy Russell is going to speak on Madison County Mysteries. Starts at 1 o'clock tomorrow, 7508165 for information. And the food part of this equation, because theater, food,
right.
Chopped in the Ozarks.
Monday night.
It's based on the popular TV show, obviously. It's a Walton Arts Center fundraiser. It features chefs Jeremy Gothrop of Greenhouse Grill, Dane Main of Petite Bistro, Chrissy Sanderson of the Northwest Arkansas Community College Culinary Arts Program, and William McCormick of Farrell's.
Yes, on Dixon Street.
And they will make things like pâté de foie gras out of Spam.
Well, they don't know what they're going to have.
Right.
They get a basket and they lift it off and
last
they
year
have
it really
something.
Was Spam.
Okay, I doubt it was Spam this year, but something.
Probably not. If you come, you get beverages and heavy hors d'oeuvres that are catered by Bill Lyle's team at Ella's Restaurant, and he was the winner last year.
I see. Okay.
You can also come and laugh at me because I'm one of the judges.
Oh, really?
Tickets are $100 to $125, and you can call 443-5600. And we'll have more food Sunday because we're going to talk about some restaurants that have been featured in What's Up lately.
Thanks, Becca.
Thanks, Kyle.
Becca Beckin-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. We've got Marquise Knox, Willie Nelson, and Wynton Marsalis doing a Ray Charles tune. We have Tracy Nelson, Henry Gray, Tommy Lee Cook, Johnny Rawls, Rory Block, Yank Rachel, and a few others. And again, that's every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large on KUAF 91.3 FM. I'm Kyle Kellums. Next on KUAF, Science Friday from Talk of the Nation. Science Friday and Talk of the Nation, two programs we heard from many of you for years that you wanted added to the KUAF lineup. And about 9 months ago, we did that. We did that with your support. And support is what we talk about often during our fundraising weeks. And this is the beginning of KUAF Spring Fundraiser for 2011. You can be a part of the financial support that keeps KUAF on the air. If you're not already, or if it's time for you to renew, you can become part of the financial support of KUAF by calling 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF. You can also call 575-KUAF. You can pledge online at KUAF.com. If you happen to have an iPhone and have access to the KUAF app, which is free, you can donate through your phone as well. 800-522-5823 or 575-5823. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Ponca, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at our website, KUAF.com. Ozarks at Large is supported by War Eagle Mill, open 7 days a week and offering a variety of whole grain products. Healthy diet tips, recipes, and information available at WarEagleMill.com. And RLT, celebrating its 25th anniversary main stage season with Arsenic and Old Lace tomorrow through April 17th. This performance tells of ladies who populate their cellar with the remains of socially and religiously acceptable rumors, their antics, and their two brothers. 631-8988 or rogerslittletheater.org for tickets or for more information. The spring fundraiser goal for KUAF this year, $150,000. Due to the uncertainty of federal funding for KUAF this year, it's more important than ever that we hit that goal. Your donation in the amount you choose will help us reach that goal. 800-522-5823 or 575-5823. We hit the goal and stay on the air when listeners just like you contribute what you can afford. It's not just one person who keeps KUAF on the air. In fact, it's thousands. That's why it's public radio, because the public has the vested interest in keeping the radio station on the air, and the programs that you enjoy, like Talk of the Nation and All Things Considered and Weekend Edition, are on the air because of your financial help. You can also contribute online at KUAF.com. You can use your credit card. You can pay by check. You can break your payment up into monthly installments. We leave all of the big decisions to you, but do encourage you, especially during this week when our goal is $150,000, that you call in or email in now. 800-522-5823 or 575-5823. Talk of the Nation Science Friday is next. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll be back Sunday morning with Weekend Ozarks at Large and a brand new week of Ozarks at Large next week, beginning each day at noon. Have a great Friday.